Hi, everybody. This is Nicola Scott, and you're listening to Behind the Panels.
They can be a great people color. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way.
It's really dark in here.
For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 62 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that regularly gets blind and believes it has superpowers. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
In this issue, Mark Millar is one step closer to royalty, Man of Steel bends the US box office to its Kryptonian will, there's another X-Men crossover event, Marvel adds two more films to Phase 3, Sony tangles a four-part web, and we guess how many gallons of body oil were used in the new trailer for the 300 prequel. Plus... our kick-ass pick of the week, Marvel's mini-series Daredevil End of Days by Brian Michael Bendis, David Mack, and just about every artist who has been involved with Daredevil over the past few decades. This is Behind the Panels. That was, of course, the Fuel song Won't Back Down from the Daredevil soundtrack. Remember that film?
I do remember that film. I was actually probably one of the few people who actually didn't mind that film.
I didn't mind it either. And if you actually see the extended cut
it's
of it...
It's a better film.
It's a much better film. And the same can't be said for Elektra, unfortunately. But if you go back and get... I think the original... I don't even know if the Blu-ray's got it, but the original DVD is worth owning just for like a 40-minute documentary on the history of Daredevil
on
there.
Yeah.
And it's got like interviews with Frank Miller and all these great people on there. So go and find that if you can.
I will say, though, that the Elektra film had a absolutely brilliant, and it's going to come up later in this show, a brilliant version of Typhoid Mary.
Yes, Typhoid Mary is great because Typhoid Mary does appear in Daredevil End of Days,
yeah.
In a very different version to the one we've seen. And I think that's one of the things that characterizes this rather good Bendis book, which is something I've not said in a long time.
You haven't said that in a long time.
Yeah. Daredevil's got a massive history. And he's appeared on TV and film a few times, a lot of comic books, but I'm going to hit up the Wayback Machine to take us back to his appearance in somebody else's film. So here we go.
David Belson, don't be afraid. Matt Murdock sent me for you. Don't. I'm not going to hurt you.
Just let me leave.
I can't. You have to help me and Matt. Come with me now.
Why should I? You could be one of them. The ones that are trying to kill me.
I could make you come with me.
No. No, I wouldn't try that. Trust me.
All right, I'll trust you. I'll give you something and then you'll come with me on your own.
What could you possibly give me?
My face, David. Ten years ago, when I was first starting out, I was ready to fight the evil in this city. I wasn't sure exactly how.
Here he is! Tindelli, what's going on? What did you tell him in there?
Shut up, I'll tell you exactly what I told them in there.
You walk off the task force.
Task force? The task force is a sham.
Are you accusing your own department?
Yeah, my own department at the DA's office, and a third of City Hall is on the take, and you can quote me on that.
Well, if the task force can't do the job, Captain, who can? Are you saying that nobody can get to these guys?
You're asking me who can take on the organization? All right, I'll tell you.
You, Captain?
Yeah, me, and a few good judges, and good cops, and a few attorneys that can be trusted. Maybe somebody who could work alone could do some damage. Maybe somebody could get behind the lines, hit and run, keep himself a secret. Maybe some kind of a... I don't know, crazy daredevil, if you will, could hurt them. You can laugh all you want, but it'll be somebody that they can't kill off, pay off, or scare off.
I like how they get the title in there.
Yeah. Some kind of Daredevil, if you will. See, it could have gone a completely different way. Some kind of bozo, if you will. You know, the only thing I remember from that clip is
I could make you come.
Or I'm going to give you the gift of my face.
Yeah. That was actually from, as you probably guessed it, even though he didn't call him, he called him David Belson in that, which is...
Because he kept using pseudonyms.
Pseudonyms,
is, yeah. I own this. I've got this in the other
this
room.
This is the trial of the Incredible Hulk. This was the telly movie that they did, I think, 89, I think, around then. So it was a little bit later than the rest of them. Yeah, 1989 was the telly movie.
There was three telly movies made after the series finished. It was the Trial of the Incredible Hulk, which had Daredevil. There was the
Incredible Hulk Returns.
That's the one I'm thinking of, which has Thor in it. And then there was, of course, the death of the Incredible Hulk.
And in this one, Trial of Incredible Hulk, you have John Rhys-Davies playing Kingpin.
That's right.
Except no one actually calls him Kingpin. He's only ever referred to as Wilson Fisk.
Yeah.
So I can picture that, actually. He's got a big booming voice.
I have a double disc set that I have in the other room, which has the two superhero tires.
I might come and borrow that when the show's over. But look, Daredevil's, we mentioned the big film that he was in. He was in different cartoons he's turned up in as well. I think ages ago on the show, we played a clip from the 90s Spider-Man series where he
turned
up in that.
That's correct, where he guest starred. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of things where he turns up like that. But that was different because he's actually wearing a black ninja outfit instead of his traditional red outfit with the horn. So definitely worth finding if you can.
It is worth finding. It's really cheesy. And look, if people have forgotten...
No, if you couldn't tell from that clip.
If people have forgotten, the original series of The Incredible Hulk, the four seasons, I think it was, that they ran of that series, was actually not a bad show. When you actually go back and watch it, you sit and go, it was the same formula that the series Kung Fu followed, where he wandered across America, you know, and hulking out every now and again, where Kung Fu would fight with his Kung Fu. But it was basically the same story. Yes, and what a great score. But anyway, the guy who created that series all went on to do the big epic miniseries as well, and he was actually quite talented. When they did these telly movies afterwards, they had a much higher cheese factor.
It's a shame that they're gone, David.
And of course, these telly movies were only made for one purpose, and that was to try and spin off other heroes into their own series.
That's true, yeah.
And none of it worked.
And that's why we're playing the Sad Hulk music.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll unceremoniously stop.
Which is
now.
We should play Sad Hulk music as well, because we have had the passing, quite some time ago, but Bill Bixby, who did play Banner, is now dead as well, which is kind of sad as well. So.
But in that movie, he hulks out. He's got a beard in the film, but when he hulks out, he doesn't have the beard.
No, because he's got that special Hulk power. It sucks the hair back in.
Which in the comic, that's what I love about the recent comics, we've got Hulk with a beard, which is brilliant.
So when he reverts back to Banner, does his beard come out like the Fuzzy Pumper Barber Shop or something?
Oh, David. David, look, that's that was a very long time ago. We'll think about what we've been reading more recently in a little segment I like to call What We've Been Reading, appropriately.
How unique.
It is, isn't it?
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
I think we should just call the segment Read Between the Lines, bitch. Yeah,
maybe we'll go to that.
Yeah.
So, Richard, what have you been reading?
Look, I think the book that we have to talk about this week,
we
must talk about, David, is Superman Unchained.
Yes.
Number one, which came out. This is the much-anticipated Superman book by Scott Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
Who I don't know if you've heard of.
He's that little-known artist who does Some Guy Dressed Like a Bat, right?
Not to be confused with...
a writer who writes somebody about
Not to be confused with Zack Snyder or Snack. This will take off, trust me.
Yeah.
This is why I'm not doing the red carpet next week.
That's right. We're meeting him next week. Yeah, right? Shall we introduce him? Him as Snack?
Mr. Snack, please tell me. Now, Zack Snyder's doing this book with legendary artist Jim Lee. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Little known artist.
Yeah, for a company called DC. The character is Superman. The book.
Is he somebody I should know?
The book's called Superman Unchained, so I was thinking...
And yet there are no chains in it.
There's no chains in there. There's not even... I was expecting him to be liberated from slavery and to go across country with Christoph Waltz.
Yeah, that would have been the story I was looking for.
That was the book that I was thinking. The thing is, this book had my curiosity, but it doesn't quite have my attention yet. It is a strangely very standard Superman book. Like, it's not... There's nothing... particularly wow-worthy about it. There's a bit at the start where...
And then there's a bit in the middle.
There's a bit at the start where there's like a massive, massive kind of big action sequence, and you actually get this fold-out, like four pages fold out into a poster to show how big this scene is. And that's a really impressive bit of art, but...
Because DC's never been prone to gimmicks
at all. No, no, no. And look out for those 3D holographic covers in September. But, you know, I mean, it's an impressive bit of art by itself, and it really lets Jim Lee cut loose on this first issue. But the thing is, with Scott Snyder, we've actually had for a long time, we've had a writer who has given us such a finely detailed Batman story that so innately understands Batman and so gets the character and gives a new spin on a character that's been around for 7 decades. Then he comes to Superman, I'm thinking, okay, he's going to do that as well. And he doesn't. And he sort of gives us the same Superman that we've seen so many. And there's a big twist at the end of it. And I kind of like, I have seen that twist ending so many times.
See, I didn't think of it as a twist. Because I didn't know who that was.
No.
So.
What's the thing? It's not even a twist ending. It's kind of like, here's a big character you don't know.
Here's a bad guy.
Yeah. And it's like, okay.
He's going to play up really important later.
Superman will probably punch him at some stage. I see. It's not a bad book by any thing. The art's gorgeous, of course, for that big, you know, blockbuster style art. Snyder's writing is of course fine, which is, you know, damning him with faint praise there, but he's fine with the book, but it just didn't do anything to really grab me as a first issue should, not in the same way the Batman number one did.
I agree with you. Look, I thought the book, I agree with you to a point. I thought the book was fun. I quite liked it. I thought this is a nice old-fashioned Superman. It's like we're not treading any new ground here at all, and we're just kind of going, and as far as Superman is concerned, he's been leaving me really cold since the New 52 started.
You know, my feelings on Superman have been clear on this, and see last week's episode on All-Star Superman, which could have been the problem going into this, straight off the back of having read All-Star Superman again. Might have coloured my...
You think just a little bit?
Just to tell you. You read one of the greatest Superman stories ever written by Grant Morrison and with art by Frank Quitely, and then read Superman Unchained, it's going to suffer in comparison. Yeah. So maybe this is a book that will grow on me as the months go by. I have confidence in Snyder because he's not led us astray yet, but I will come back for a second issue. Of course I will. Because it's still got to be better than Superman and Action Comics has been up until... this point.
I agree, and I think we need to give this a shot, because I think that it has the potential,
because DC aren't doing so well.
No, and at the moment it has the potential for being a great Superman book. Jim Lee's art is gorgeous, beautiful comic book style, clean lines, big heroic moves and so forth. We're not talking about impressionism or strange color palettes or pop art or anything like that. He's got a really traditional style, but when it comes to that traditional style, he's the best in the business.
Yeah, because you're really only talking about a handful of people who do that really amazing kind of blockbuster style art, as I called it. You've got your Jim Lee, you've got like people like David Finch, who's doing it for Justice League. But to my mind, I like Brian Hitch for that kind of stuff. I think he did a lot of stuff on the Ultimates. What's he doing? I can't remember what he's doing at the moment, but I think he did some of the Age of Ultron stuff, and that looks fantastic.
Artists on the New 52 at the moment are that very clean style. You look at the art in World's Finest, you look at the art in Batgirl, you look at the art in, and they've all got this very similar, because Jim Lee did a lot of the designs for the New 52
with the exception of a handful of those comics, like, you know, Greg Capullo's Batman or Andrea Sorrentino's Green Arrow.
I was about to say, and Batwoman has always had this really unique style.
That's J.H. Williams III. Amazing stuff. You're getting that very traditional stuff, and that's what DC does. I mean, if you want experimental art, you go to the indies. Yeah. You know, I mean,
or in the case, in some ways, in Marvel at the moment.
Well, Marvel's, I mean, look, you know,
Marvel is taking some real risks at the moment.
David Aja and Francesca Francavilla on Hawkeye. Amazing.
I was also thinking, though, the art on Captain Marvel at the moment is this really impressionistic style.
Yes.
The art in FF. Give me his name.
I've forgotten. FF. Sorry, Mike Allred, of course.
Mike Allred. These are really unique and different styles. They're not. And, I mean, you look at DC, it's much more traditional than Marvel at the moment. Marvel is going out on a limb.
I think so as well. And I appreciate that, because I'm, you know, I read comic. The reason you read comics is half of the art, as much as it is for those word things in the round.
Are you supposed to read those?
I can't read. Oh, you know this. Okay. I never learned. I just look at the pictures. That's why we're doing a comic show and a film show. Ooh. You know, that's what we, you know, that's why I've always done this. Yeah, so I mean, look, that I've been reading that. The other thing we'll quickly mention is Batman 21.
Which I haven't read yet.
Because it's the start of the Year Zero, which is going back and telling, it's kind of it's similar to Batman Begins in a lot of ways. But also, I've just found out that the Year Zero concept is going to go line wide. It's going to go across a whole bunch of different things.
Of course
things.
It is. I'm sorry, I'm so over DC.
They may not do this at the same time, but I think they're going to, like, at various points.
This is like the Zero issues all over again.
Again, I know why they couldn't do it there. But I mean, I think now they've got a lot of new creative teams and they've got their line more or less where they want it to be. I don't mind it because a couple of those.
I'm sorry if I sound harsh, but it's just that every time I seem to turn around, DC's got another new gimmick.
Well, they've got two or three gimmicks running back to back at the moment, so I'm a little bit dirty with them around that as well. And Forever Evil Month is really, really going to push the dollars because, I mean, let's face it, they know the comic readers are collectors by nature, and they will go out and buy the four issues between Batman 23 and Batman 24. So effectively, I'm buying four extra issues this year, so my set is complete. And the price point on each one of those issues has gone up by a dollar. So they're really, really gouging this as much as they can to get back that 10% market
share.
They're
going to lose readers in the long run, though.
I think so.
That's what's going to happen.
This is what happened in the 90s.
Yeah.
This is why people turned away in droves from DC and Marvel. This is why Marvel almost went bankrupt in the
Because they go, we're on a good thing. Let's get as much money as we can. Fans eventually go, I have no more money to give.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just buy covers. I'd actually like a decent story inside.
Look, I'll just say before we sign off on this section that I also read an advanced copy of Dark Horse Presents number 25. It'll be out by the time the show comes out. And it's my favorite anthology book on the market at the moment. It's like an 80-page prestige glossy that comes out once a month. This particular issue, obviously 25, big anniversary issue, they've got a story in there by Jane Espenson, Buffy writer, doing a short Buffy story about Billy the Vampire Slayer, who was a character who turned up earlier in season 9. And this is a three-part mini-series about him. And, you know, with all the attention Archie's been getting, they've been doing some really great gay storylines within Buffy season 9. Buffy's always been great at issues like that. The other great story to look at from in there is a time travel story by Matt Fraction. So definitely go and check that one out.
And I just want to mention very, very quickly that for those who gave up on Thanos Rising from issue 1 because of the way we spoke about it, go back and have another look. It's up to issue 3 now, and it actually has gotten better. Richard and I both had a look at it, and by the time we get to issue 3, this is kind of more the Thanos we expected.
Exactly. It's unfortunate those first issues were just so, you know, high school drama, you know, sort of thing.
I think by the time, spoilers, people, but by the time he actually strings up his mother, I think now we're onto the Thanos we wanted.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, David, it sounds like it's time for us to have a look at this week's news headlines.
All right.
Warner's Man of Steel broke June box office records with a $125.1 million four-day opening weekend. As of recording, it's taken well over $200 million worldwide.
Australian writer Tom Taylor will take over Earth 2 in October, joining Nicholas Scott for an all-Australian team.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie!
Oi, oi, oi!
Meanwhile, exiting writer James Robinson will join Mark Waid for Marvel's original graphic novel in April 2014 called Spider-Man Family Business with Italian artist Gabrielle Del Otto. It'll introduce the previously unseen character of Peter Parker's sister.
Oh, okay, I didn't know you had one. Also coming from DC, in October is a new Superman Wonder Woman book written and illustrated by Charles Soule and Tony S. Daniel, respectively.
Sounds like slash fic. DC DC has also teased a Green Lantern crossover for October called Lights Out.
That's kind of how I feel about the book at the moment. Marvel will celebrate the 50th anniversary of the X-Men. It's in September with what they are calling the first major X-Men crossover event in over 3 years. Guess that tells us what they think about last year's Avengers versus X-Men.
John C. Reilly has been confirmed as Nova Corps leader Roman Day in the Guardians of the Galaxy film.
All right. Still on film news, Iron Man 3 composer Brian Tyler has been tapped to replace Carter Burwell on Thor: The Dark World. Can you dig it?
Sanrio and DC Comics have branded together for a range of Hello Kitty merch featuring Kitty's various DC characters. Can you spell ka-ching?
Sin City 2 A Dame to Kill For has been delayed until 2014. Just enough time for Robert Rodriguez to release another trilogy of kids' films.
DC Comics also announced a Justice League 3000 book for the future from Keith Giffen, JMD Matias, and Kevin Maguire, the people who brought the chuckles to the Justice League book in the 80s.
Mark Millar has been awarded an MBE for his services to literature and drama. Have they read his stuff?
Yeah, for making little girls swear. That's basically what he's getting an award for there. Warner and Legendary Pictures have released the first trailer for 300 Rise of an Empire. Finally, a comic property other than Archie Comics that supports a fight for gay rights. Let's have a listen.
It begins as a whisper. A promise. The lightest of breezes dances above the death cries of 300 men. A wind, my brothers of sacrifice. A wind of freedom. A wind of justice. A wind of vengeance.
Things much slower in 300 worlds.
It's an awful lot of wind as well.
The wind. It will be a wind of beans.
Sony has set dates for a third and fourth Amazing Spider-Man film in 2016 and 2018. Wait a minute. Did I miss part two?
Yeah. Speaking of sequels, Marvel Studios has announced two new mystery films for May 2016 and May 2017. What do we think they are, David McVeigh?
At a guess, I'm going to say that Namor is one of those because they've been trotting out the posters for Namor every Comic-Con for 3 years.
I'm thinking Dazzler the movie.
Oh, absolutely. I'm there.
And
can I pre-order?
Yeah. I think that, well, it's possible that one of them will be a sequel.
It's possible it will be a sequel, but there has been a lot of murmuring. I love that word, murmuring.
It's
been a lot
of murmuring. It rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It does. About Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, and there's been talk of Black Panther film.
Yes. And Wesley's coming out of jail now, so
that's
could
true.
Try and get Wesley Snipes to do Black Panther.
Well, there is a rumor that part of Avengers 2 will be set in Africa.
Wakanda.
So we might have something in Wakanda. Mm. And that might introduce the character of Black Panther there. Really interesting bit of news that came out of Joss Whedon was talking this week, and he was saying something along the lines of that Loki won't be in Avengers 2.
Well, probably a good thing, because how many times can you actually
exactly.
say, how desperate
how
are you?
How desperate are you to hire me again? You have made me very, very rich. So it's gonna be interesting. And he also says that Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver aren't there to make things easier for the Avengers. So it's kind of maybe hinting a little bit at where that thing is. That's actually on the Empire podcast this week for Much Ado About Nothing. So that's worth going and having a listen to. I tend to agree with you. I think one of them will almost undoubtedly be Doctor Strange. Another one of them is potentially a sequel or potentially an original film.
Now tell me, has Ant-Man officially been put on the slate?
Ant-Man's got a date of
2015.
End of 2015. Yeah.
Okay, so that has a date. So that's not one of the mysteries.
No. So that'll be. It's basically the lineup from this point forwards is Thor: The Dark World, Captain America: Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Untitled Avengers sequel, Ant-Man, mm-hmm. and then these two mystery films.
All right. So if we are bringing in the cosmic for Phase 2. What's to say we're not bringing in the magic for Phase 3? Mm. Bringing in, like, the Illuminati?
Could be.
So we could then bring in people like Black Panther, who is much more spiritually based. We could bring in Doctor Strange. We could bring in... I'm just trying to think who else is magic-based.
Well, they've got that as well. But or they could be going for the gritty street-level stuff to tie it in with S.H.I.E.L.D.
And speaking of Daredevil, they've got Daredevil back now.
They've got various properties they're keen mm-hmm. to get the rights... That they've got the rights back
to punish. I want to see Luke Cage, Power Fist and Iron Man. No, what was his name? Power Man and Iron Fist. That's right,
yeah.
I want to see a 70s jive... Power Man and Iron Fist. Can you dig it?
Definitely get Brian Tyler to the soundtrack for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's so many possibilities, but I think Doctor Strange is almost a dead cert because Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige has basically been talking up.
I can't believe we found out how to pronounce that. We still can't do it.
And that's how the show goes.
Yeah.
he's been talking about the Doctor Strange for quite some time. So I'd be very surprised if he doesn't make that happen. Let's see how it goes. But then again, it could all depend on whether or not Guardians of the Galaxy flops ass.
Yeah. Well, we still are at a film where everybody I have spoken to and everything that I have listened to, when they go, Marvel's producing Guardians of the Galaxy, inevitably the statement, what's that, comes up.
No. I don't think, and when they find out a little bit about it, they go, really?
Yeah.
A raccoon? A tree? Really? No, seriously, what's the next Marvel movie
about? A green woman? Yeah. So, Guardians has got a very big uphill climb.
Mm, but that's why they're being sort of overloading it with actors.
Yeah.
So anyway, we've mentioned Daredevil a few times. I think it's time that we hit up the pick of the week, David.
Cool.
So here we go.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Written all the way back in 2007 by Brian Michael Bendis and David Mack, the 8-issue Daredevil End of Days considers what happens when Daredevil is killed at the hands of his greatest foe, Bullseye. Reporter Ben Urich, haunted by Matt Murdock's final word, seeks to retrace the last days of his costumed counterpart. Featuring a who's who of Daredevil writers and artists, this is not a dream. This is not Elseworlds. This is canon. This is Daredevil, End of Days.
That is a great soundtrack, it really is.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that's, again, from the Daredevil soundtrack back in the... when it was released, what was 2005, did I say? So that's... biggest sort of musical style differences you can possibly find between that and Fuel.
And Evanescence.
And stay tuned to the very end of the show where you'll hear a slightly different version of that theme as well.
So this book, now,
Tell me about this book.
The booming intro at the beginning tells me that this is canon.
It is canon. Now, what Brian Michael Bendis has actually said, he did write this quite some time ago. Now, this is... written originally pre-Mark Waid. Right. So, and in many ways, Mark Waid's run on Daredevil has returned us to kind of a very 70s and 80s Frank Miller vibe to the book. But in its own very strong and unique way as well. Let's not mince words. It is a masterpiece, what Mark Waid's doing with that.
Yeah, I actually caught up with Mark Waid this week. I actually caught up with all the way up to date now. So.
Yeah, and the where the most recent issue was left us in terms of who was behind Daredevil's Madness is phenomenal. But really, he wrote this back in 2007 with David Mack. He'd not long finished a very long run on Daredevil. And all the people involved in this were either had significant runs on Daredevil, either with Bendis, the artists, I think all worked with Bendis at various times, or in the case of people like Bill Sienkiewicz, he's just known for doing amazing runs on Daredevil with Frank Miller and his own things, and he did Elektra and all that sort of thing. But the thing is about this book, he says that it's canon, but it's in sort of an ambiguous near future, kind of like Marvel's The End series. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I do know The End series.
But
yes.
he said this goes a little bit further. This actually brings it, he says, this is continuity, so this will happen sometime.
It's a little bit like, for those who have been watching the Fast and Furious films, it's a little bit like Han.
Yes.
In all the most recent Fast and Furious, because we already know the outcome.
Yes, we know if you've
but
seen...
But we just don't know when it's
if
coming.
If you've seen Tokyo Drift, yeah, exactly. Now, actually, it's funny, he compares this to Dark Knight Returns in a way, which I think, you know, normally, you know, that kind of comparison, you'd think, yeah, okay, blow your own trumpet. I think in this case it's justified, but he compares it in the sense that... I love the way he said this. He said the Dark Knight Returns became canon through sheer force of will. And it really has, because we all kind of think, yep, that's where Batman ends up. And yeah, if you take Frank Miller's year one at one end of the scale, and you take Dark Knight Returns at the other end of the scale, you kind of think, yep, everything else does sort of fit in between, and you can kind of have Grant Morrison's theory of all Batman existing in the same timeline, somewhere in between then. The same's true of Daredevil. You've had a lot of stylistic differences and changes throughout the years, but there's this sort of street-level grittiness that's remained constant throughout it, and that's what you get in this book. And I think using all those artists that were strong, and I'll talk about those in a minute, that were strong on their own individual runs, gives it that sense of being grounded in what came before. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's what came in Bendis's run, of course, not in anybody else's run. This is all the characters that turn up, characters he used in his run. In particular, a character he introduced called Echo, who turns up briefly. She's a deaf character.
Yep.
So that's...
she was briefly in Avengers too, I think.
She was. Yeah. She was briefly in Avengers.
Bendis's run of Avengers.
No, he was definitely she was definitely a Bendis character. So... You know, this is, as I said, it's not entirely incongruous with Mark Waid's version. And I think this is kind of got, because he just finished writing it a few years before that, kind of got an Alias vibe to it in a lot of ways.
It does. And some of the art style is very similar to Alias as well. I actually really enjoyed this book. I thought this was a really interesting... When I read it, I didn't read it as canon. I read it as an Elseworlds. I read it as a possible outcome. And I read it, and I went, this is a really interesting... And it's really filmish in many ways. It's very much the Citizen Kane trope.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, it is the, I think even Ben Ulrich... jokes at one point.
He says he'd get him a sled.
Yeah, exactly. He said, what does Mapone mean? Can we decide whether it's Mapone or Mapone?
I thought it was Mapone. But
given what we revealed Mapone is at the end,
could
I wonder
it be Maypone?
I
don't know. The problem is we'll never know. I mean,
exactly. That's the great mystery of the book.
How do you pronounce the word? So basically, in a nutshell, when Daredevil is killed in the first issue, after being away for a great deal of time, his last word uttered just before he's killed by Bullseye is Mapone.
Rosebud,
basically Mapone. And the rest of the book is Ben Ulrich, who is always a character I've loved. I've always loved Ben Ulrich. And It's about him trying to write a story for J. Jonah Jameson, which is...
For a dying newspaper.
For a dying newspaper, where they're literally about to close their doors. Trying to write an article that is putting together the last days of Matt Murdock.
Mm.
Finding out where he's been.
And as a result, this is not so much about Daredevil's death as it is about his life.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, the bottom line is he dies in the first issue.
Mm.
The rest of it is about everybody else. And it's then basically Ben Urich going almost like a who's who of Daredevil's life for 8 issues. And it's remarkable because all these characters, and we mentioned it before, he goes to see Typhoid Mary at one point, who's now an actress, redhead, you know, and basically is on meds to stop her from having split personality
And refers, we said, that's not something, no, they aren't things that I did, that's things she did.
And I don't like to talk about her, you know?
And she's got 2 children, and when Ben Urich asks, are they his? She goes, I don't know. They're hers.
They're hers. That's right. And it's a great moment. Like to bring up the kids, actually, because this is something that runs throughout it. He keeps running into all these people all the way through it. You notice they all had little redheaded kids.
The thing is, I think Matt Murdock is going up against Tony Stark for the biggest pussy hound in the Marvel U. Let's face it.
He has so many children, illegitimate children out there.
Dude gets around.
Absolutely.
He uses that blind card, doesn't he?
He does, yeah, I'm sure. It's a sympathy card.
I'll use my billy club. And
oh, dear. Is that what he calls it?
Yeah.
Oh, whew. It's getting steamy in here.
We mentioned Slash Fic before, didn't we? So we're bringing it in here. But the thing is,
was there supposed to be a connection with the redhead kids? That's what I wanted to know.
It's entirely possible because I think they're implying that everyone has their secrets and Daredevil's got his. I mean, it's not so much.
Now we know what he's been doing for the last few years.
Maybe now we know how he went blind. Oh yeah, it just splashed all over my face, and I didn't know what happened. But the thing is, it's not so much about his death, as I said, it's about the impact of a whole life of violence and being a vigilante. It's like what kind of effect does that have on the people that are around you? What kind of effect does that have on the people that you fall in love with?
Yeah.
You know, it's touched on in a major way in things like Spider-Man with the death of Gwen Stacy and all that kind of stuff. And if you went back and did the same thing of Peter Parker's life, you wouldn't have quite as many girlfriends. But you would have...
well, you never know.
Yeah, no. And I wonder, he can
my
stick...
My spider sense is tingling.
Tingling, and he can stick any part of his body to any surface. Well,
that's true.
It's a handy skill. But, you know, you can see, like, this massive impact that he's had not just on the people he's loved and his friends and comrades and people who worked beside him, but on the people that were his enemies as well, because not long into this, Bullseye actually turns up dead. Of an apparent suicide. And the implication at first, Ben Urich thinks this is something that he killed himself because of the word Mapone. He thinks that was enough to send him mad. But what it becomes slowly evident was that without a Daredevil, there is no Bullseye.
That's
you
true.
Know.
Yeah.
And the same way that the Joker would have no purpose without Batman and vice versa. You know, these two were symbiotic in their relationship. And in a lot of ways, Matt Murdock was very much a part of the lives of all these people. Would these people have existed? Would Typhoid Mary have existed in the way that, you know, in the over the top obsessive way that she did, were it not for Matt Murdock being who he is, being the charismatic superhero that he is? Because what we're really talking about in here is the value of heroes as well. What does a city do without its hero?
Well, it's interesting because they actually paint the picture that in the latter part of his life, Daredevil did take the war to the streets, basically. Mm. He did clean up Devil's Kitchen, or Hell's Kitchen, sorry. He did make everybody fear the criminals and basically get rid of them all. And then his downfall came because he killed Kingpin.
Well, that's the thing. We've got to mention the reason that he was away for a while was the fact that in front of a lot of people, he couldn't accept the fact that Kingpin had gone straight. He kept pushing him in public.
Mm.
And then eventually beat him to death
in the street. Yeah.
And he turns around and says, "You don't understand. I tried everything else. I couldn't get rid of him. This is the only way I could finish it," which is when he realized that he'd gone too far and he disappeared for a while.
And well, the people turned against him.
People turned against him. And the first time that they'd seen him again, basically, was this fight between Daredevil and Bullseye. And it was really the first time he'd appeared again in a long time. What I think is interesting about that is it allows Bendis to introduce, or Bendis and Mack, I should say, to introduce the Punisher into the story as
and what a great intro.
Oh, man. it's great. I mean, look, you know, the Punisher and Daredevil have had this long-standing kind of rivalry. Not rivalry, but
they actually bring it up. They actually talk about it in the Wade run.
Yes, yeah, very much.
When we talked about the Wade run way back early on in the show, and we were saying that there's a part where the Punisher basically says to him, we're exactly the same, I just go that extra step. You know, and that's the thing. They are the same character.
It even comes up in Garth Ennis's Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe.
Yes, absolutely. Like, you know. And it's just that Daredevil won't kill Punisher.
Yeah, that's
will.
The line here. And once Daredevil's crossed that line, you know, is he just as bad as the Punisher? Because it's so easy. Once he kills that first person, why not kill?
Because the thing about the Punisher and what's made the Punisher such an enduring character over all these years is the fact that, yes, he is a psychotic madman mass murderer. But when you look at it, when you actually examine it, every single person he kills deserves it. you know what I mean? And that's what, I mean, it's whether the legally or not, or whether that fits within the judicial system, that's not the point. The point is the Punisher picks his targets and knows exactly who he's killing.
It's funny because this week I was also watching Batman Under the Red Hood.
I've got that on my Apple TV at the moment.
Yeah, I'm going back and watching, because I think you said last week, you know, that Superman Unbound made you go and back and watch
I watched that, and I watched, what was the other one we watched?
All-Star Superman.
That's the one. Yeah. No, and there was one more on top of that.
And anyway, I went back and watched that, and one of the threads that's running through that is about that line that Batman won't cross, and that Jason Todd, as Red Hood, is trying to say, come on, of anybody else, you should kill the Joker. I mean, he killed me. You know, I mean, that should be reason enough alone to get rid of this guy. And he's saying, you don't understand. It would be very easy to kill the Joker. I could have done it before. He said, but once I cross that line, what's to stop me from killing anybody I don't like?
Scott Snyder brings this up as well.
Yeah, exactly.
In the Death of the Family.
Death of the Family. And this is a recurring motif in Batman, in Daredevil, never in something like Superman, who's above it all. Except they do kind of touch on in the sense of what if Superman realizes he's a god. But the idea of a superhero having a line that they will not cross is what makes them a hero and not a vigilante.
Yeah.
You know, that's the line between hero and vigilantism. And that's what comes out in Ben Urich's investigation. You know,
the Punisher is a vigilante.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt about that. He is a straight up, full-on madman psychotic vigilante.
And as you said, the scene that he's introduced, basically, Urich goes to visit him in jail, and you don't know who he's visiting at first. And I love the scene. He's going, you must have some really powerful friends if they're letting you in to see this guy.
Yeah.
And
then the guard says, no metal, no this. The laundry list of stuff. You know, you do not stand during the thing. You do not hand him anything.
Oh, you can see he's a slightly older Punisher. And interestingly enough, there was a book coming up later this year called Trial of the Punisher, which is basically Frank Castle turns himself in.
Interesting.
And that's the start of the story. So I'm guessing he has an ulterior motive for that. But it'd be interesting to see where that goes, and if it's anything like the storyline that runs through this. But you know, great thing. But it does bring up that very important point about who Daredevil is. And what makes him a hero, and I like it because it's viewed through Urich, it's viewed through the everyman, in the same way that Mark Waid used the everyman in Kingdom Come, in the same way that a couple of weeks ago we talked about Kurt Busiek using the everyman in Marvels, Bendis and Mack use Ben Urich as their as us.
Well, in fact, Marvel Universe in general uses Ben Urich that way all the time. Ben Urich runs all the way through Civil War, for instance, and he's basically us through Civil War. That's why I really like Urich, because he shows up whenever we need that
and he's,
view on the street.
He's the best investigative reporter in Marvel U as well.
Yeah.
It is just as much his story as well. Now, what I wanted to just read out about, look, the visuals, I just really have to mention those before we start winding this up, because we're talking about art by Klaus Janson, Bill Sienkiewicz, Alex Maleev, and David Mack, and they all adopt to their own styles throughout this. I love each and every one of these artists.
like every other comic book fan. I mean, they're amazing. Sienkiewicz did a thing called Daredevil Love and War with Frank Miller. He also did Electra Assassin, both of which are available as big, oversized reprints. Amazing stuff. He did various issues with Miller between like the 190s and the 230-ish kind of area. And his Kingpin and Elektra in this are sublime. And you see it when Kingpin's introduced in this episode, in this one of the issues, I think it's around issue 3, it's kind of a big splash image of the Kingpin, but it's done in that Sienkiewicz style. And it's painted and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. The same way that Alex Maleev was a longtime collaborator with Bendis. He did Sam and Twitch with him. He did about 50 issues during Bendis's run, so his influence is in that as well. You see him come out through it. And David Mack, and I love his art because it's like nobody else's art. He does those things where it's painted and there's little scribblings around the edge of the page. He did a whole run like that. All of the issues were like that, in a run called Parts of a Whole, which introduced Echo. So it was great that he got back the artist who introduced that character to do those pages, because in some ways it's then you kind of feel as though you've gone back to that moment in the comic, you know, and it was such a beautiful motif using those artists to introduce the characters they're most famous for, and I love it. I love that art style, and in terms of that style, I just wanted to read something really quickly that David Mack told Comic Book Resources about the style, because I think it's something you'll probably appreciate. He said, it's not a major part of our template, but there are aspects of it that remind me of Taxi Driver or Chinatown or Coppola's The Conversation, or the Warren Beatty film The Parallax View. In those films, there's a character trying to unravel some mystery, and the paradigm of what they think it is in the beginning is a little different from what it really is. And then suddenly their quest consumes them. So it matches a lot of the texture of those films and the content, but also the storytelling. And I think that's a really
appropriate. That's very good. That's very good indeed.
And I really like that because it's set in New York. Yeah. It's got that gritty feel because this is very much a even though it's set in the not distant future, it's a New York of a bygone era as well.
And it's very street level. I mean, it's really gritty and everything kind of got
that. Only that Daredevil dies at the start of this. This is the type of Daredevil movie I want to see.
Yeah.
You know, this would be fantastic. Look,
we should mention very quickly because we've kind of skipped over it in the plot, but we should talk about Mappone.
I was about to say, look, Mappone. Yeah. Okay, this is the spoiler.
All our shows are spoilers.
This is the spoiler, people. So if you're driving, we're giving you time to pull over your car and switch off the radio. 5, 4, 3, 2. Mappone turns out to be not a thing, but a person. And we mentioned all these children running through it, and it seems as though Daredevil squired himself something of a daughter with Ms. Natasha Romanoff, which is a person that couldn't be found earlier in the issue. That should have been our first hint. And Nick Fury actually turns up to tell Ben Urich.
A very old Nick Fury.
I think Urich actually says, Christ, is he still alive? You know, to tell him that Natasha's dead. In some ways,
really interesting because it brings it full circle as well, because Natasha is the first person he looks for.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's like it's the first person he goes to finds out she's dead, and then everything else leads on.
And if she had been alive, she probably would have known eventually. And actually, there's one moment with the Punisher where he says he's hinting that he knows what Mappone is, but he could just be messing with Urich. You don't know. Yeah. So he gets nothing out of the Punisher. He gets nothing out of Frank Castle.
There's that one scene where the one scene with the Punisher where he shows up at his apartment, and while he's talking to Urich, he's raiding the medicine cabinet. He's injecting himself.
I love it.
No, not Urich. Sorry, the new Daredevil. He's talking to the new Daredevil, He's basically taking drugs. He's doing the good stuff.
Yeah. But Mappone is this daughter character, and look, in some ways, and I've read this elsewhere, it's a little bit of a cheat because it's MacGuffin at the end of the day. It is Rosebud, but it is the catalyst for him to go back and do this exploration and to find out all these things about, you know, skeletons in the closet.
And the reason we're also bringing up the Mappone character is because we do have this new Daredevil running around who basically is looking for a particular person as well.
And the Daredevil turns out to be someone very close to Urich.
Yes.
Which is very interesting. Now, look, the interesting thing about Mappone, I think there was one little cheat in there, and I noticed when I went back, Nick Fury has a file at one point that has Mappone on the cover.
Yeah.
And he gets rid of it. Now, why wouldn't it's, say, Mpone Romanoff on the cover of it. Why would he just have the first name of someone on the file?
Well, because that's the envelope that it's in.
I'm not convinced.
You know, and he's giving it to Yurik, as in, open this, have a look, the answer's inside. Yurik throws it in the fire.
Yeah, but why wouldn't it have the full name on the
thing? Because that's the name that Yurik was looking for.
Oh, look, I'm look, anyway, that beside the point, it's... I say it's a bit of a cheat, but it's still actually it was a nice payoff. I liked the ending of it because it meant that his life had a legacy.
And it brought it full circle.
It did bring it full circle. This is probably one of the best things that Bendis has written in years. And when people speak about Bendis highly, this is the reason.
Yeah.
It's a celebration of Daredevil. It is, even if you get this for no other reason.
If I had any complaint over this book, is the fact that, and it's the only complaint I have over this book, in fact, which is I think they stretched it out just a little bit too far.
I think it probably could have been a six issue.
Yeah,
I agree.
Six issues, yeah. No problem. It just felt like they dragged it out a little bit long.
And I think that's actually a problem with a lot of Bendis' miniseries. That, I mean, Age of Ultron is 10 issues. It could have been.
Well, Age of Ultron should have been one.
Well, actually, Age of Ultron started out strong and there was the making of a good story there, but if he'd had to wrap it up in 5 issues or something, it would have been an amazing story. As it stands, it's gone all over the place. It's got pacing issues, which is a problem with these event stories. But look, you know, I think this is as good as anything else that he's written, not lately. But is anything else that
cold,
he's written?
Man, cold.
Anything good as anything he's written? Look, I've got my problems with two particular titles at the moment, Age of Ultron, and I'm not a big fan of Guardians. I still think Brian Michael Bendis is one of the most amazing comic book writers of the last 10, 15 years. So all credit where credit's due there. This is a great book. I recommend reading it. But if you are going to read it, I would recommend, if you haven't got the singles, wait till July 16th and the hardcover collection comes out. Get that, read it all in one hit, because this, as you said at the start, David, this is like a movie and you want to read it in one sitting.
Yeah, don't read this in individuals. I actually, when this first started coming out, I think you read the first one,
I stopped around three.
I actually collected them all up and then read them in one hit.
Much better idea. Much better idea.
Because I could see already from the beginning that this wasn't going to work as singles, so...
David, look, we're running out of time, so let's just agree we recommend this book.
We do.
And it is if you're looking for a great Daredevil read that's as good as the classic Daredevil run, go check this out.
Yeah, it's a good book. Very much worth the time.
David, I want you to hit up some Girl from Ipanema, because we have some feedback. We won't have a chance to get to it this week, but we've got something very else important to plug this week.
Here we go.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
This show comes out on your podcast feed on a Friday, with any luck. And
maybe Saturday.
Maybe Saturday. Well, so the thing is, this Saturday and Sunday, we will be out at Supernova in Sydney. So you may not hear this message before you hear the podcast.
Now, the good news is this one will be out on Friday, because I'm actually working a day shift tomorrow, which means I'll be able to edit in the evening. So we'll be out where it's supposed to be.
The point being, we'll be at Supernova this week. So if you are hearing this before we go to Supernova, come and talk to us. We'll be you'll see us by our logos. You'll know us by the Trail of the Dead. We'll be out there, we'll be recording interviews. If you come up to us and say anything remotely resembling Diggle, from show us your Diggle to jiggle my Diggle,
realistically, if you just came up and said
hi, I'm John Smith, I'm a fan of the show, or hi, what are you giving away, you'll get some of these, some pins, you'll get some stickers, that wasn't actually the stickers, but you'll get some free stuff. You'll probably, your voice might end up on the show when we do a Supernova special a little later on. The videos are going to go up on our new YouTube channel coming soon, and it'll also be a chance to meet some of you guys, because we've heard some of your feedback. Now it's a chance to actually meet you, so looking forward to that this weekend. It's going to be big. So
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it too. So if the weather is not too miserable this weekend in Sydney, we will catch you all there indoors.
It's indoors, but I mean, we'll be outdoors as well.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll be catching stuff everywhere.
Yeah, we'll be getting between our homes and Supernova, which will require us being outdoors at some stage.
At some stage, that's right.
So next week, though, we will be doing something almost as big as Supernova. We were going to take a week off next week, then we thought, hang on,
we can't
take next week off, because you know what comes out in Australia next week? Man of Steel by Snack. So we have to go and see Snack's new film. The new Superman film. We've been hearing mixed reports from the States. Now it's our chance
really
to see this.
Mixed,
yeah, really mixed. As mixy as a mixed thing that can get mixed.
It's going to be very interesting to see if we can unmix this film.
Yeah, like, we're going to need Mixed Master Mike on this show.
But will
let's
it have this?
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
I hope so.
I'm really hoping it's going to have something along the lines of...
Oh, yes. What have you got up your sleeve?
Oh, let me see. What have I got here? Here's one. Here's one. I really want it to have...
Not so fast, nicotine.
Or...
Easy, miss. I've got you.
You've got me. Who's got you?
Exactly.
Margot Kidd is at Supernova.
We got to talk to her.
We've got to talk to her and see who's got her these days. So that's going to be a big episode next week. After the weeks after that, we're going to take a little bit of time off because we've been doing this hard weekly for the 6 months almost.
Yep.
So we're going to take
but
some time
But in that
off.
Time, even though we'll be taking a week off, we'll actually still be feeding stuff up onto the YouTube channel and stuff like that.
Stuff like
so
that. And
there will
at,
be stuff coming
And at
out.
Some stage in there, I'll be going off to Melbourne as well. And I'll be going to Oz Comic Con, and there's a few people who've already said they'd like to meet me down there as well, so we'll look forward to that. We're hopefully going to bring back a few interviews from both cons as well.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, David, where can we find us on the interwebs?
Well, you can find me at geekactually.com, where I've started putting up minute reviews again for films, so please go check
Yay.
Those out. And you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh.
You can find me on Twitter at DVDBits. I've been putting up reviews as well on TheRealBits.com. That's the RELBits.com. Of course, on BehindThePanels.net, lots of reviews, lots of news, lots of content up there. That is our main portal for everything. You can also find me weekly on Newsarama.com. You may have heard of it if you're a comic fan. Finally, if you want to support the show, support any of our endeavors, hit up BehindThePanels.net, go to the Cafe Press link, buy our merchandise, buy some of these things if you can't make it to any of the cons. You just want a little button to wear around to support the show. Buy some stickers, buy t-shirts, buy mugs, buy hoodies because winter is coming here in Australia. Winter is coming.
I'm wearing my hoodie right now.
It's a very stylish looking hoodie, David. You can even buy jumpers. And look, you know, if there's anything else you see in Cafe Press you want us to sell, like G-strings or... I don't know.
Shot glasses.
Yeah, glasses, yeah. Anything else like that. Unfortunately, they don't sell Black Mantas. So we can't. We
I'm
can't
sure there's another
that.
Store somewhere where we could probably
yeah.
organize that.
I want to get official Behind the Panels condoms.
There you go.
That's what I want.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Look, if you want any of that stuff, just hit us up on the site. There's, you know, the margins of profits go to us.
The marginal profits.
Marginal profits go to us. Eventually, after thing. Until next week. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.